to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis.
One of the most common externalities produced by infrastructure systems, transportation facilities in particular, is noise, which can come from operations, like trains passing nearby, as well as from construction of new facilities. Noise can be a warning of danger, but it can also be annoying, disruptive of human activities, and at some levels a threat to human health. Measuring and mitigating infrastructure noise are complex technical tasks. To help us understand the issues and the methods and the options for managing infrastructure noise, we're talking with Dr. Hugh Sarnman, who is the president of ATS Consulting in Pasadena, California. ATS performs acoustic evaluations and develops mitigation strategies for transportation facilities. Hugh, really happy to talk with you this morning.
Thank you.
Just as a starter, what are the noisiest kinds of infrastructure systems you deal with?
Well, I deal mainly with rail transit systems, and the noise primarily comes from the wheels rolling on the track, the main noise source. There's various other noise sources, but that's the one that affects people most commonly.
When do you get into the process? Is it after there's a problem, or is it earlier in the design activities?
We get involved all through the process. We get involved in the environmental process, deciding what needs to be done to make the system meet both the noise and vibration requirements. We get involved in the final design. We get involved in the construction. And then after there's problems, after work is developed, we'll get involved in helping solve the problem. For example, we've done quite a bit of work in the past 5 or 6 years with the BART system in San Francisco, where they have a fairly severe problem with rail corrugation. Rail corrugation is something that happens, something like a dirt road getting a washboard effect on a dirt road. Kind of wave gets into the rail, and the effect can be very much louder sound levels. One recent example at BART is where they're making a big effort to reduce the noise using rail grinding, which is where they bring in a system to grind the rail and smooth out the corrugation. They've had a 20 decibel reduction, and 20 decibels is a huge reduction. Got a typical highway sound barrier, which are fairly common now. About 10 dB is the maximum you can get. Getting more than that requires very high walls, and things like wind and so on will affect whether the sound wall is effective. And the 20 decibels is a huge amount. That's like going from extremely loud to you can have a conversation easily inside the train. So a number of different things that can cause the noise, and perhaps the most interesting now is how to make sure that the noise stays quiet over time. And we've been doing a lot of work with rail grinding to understand why it gets quiet sometimes and not quiet other times. I'm not an expert in rail grinding, but I feel like I'm becoming one. There's so much stuff going on related to making sure the system stays quiet after it's operational.
In this particular situation, this corrugation of rail, is it a problem for people on board the train or for neighbors of the facility?
It's a problem for both. At the BART system, just the example, it was mainly a problem for people at the wayside who had the trains going by. But it's come to be a problem on board the trains because the sound levels are so high. And apparently people are starting to use social media to complain about the noise. And so it's something that's gotten to the board's attention. They're very concerned about it. And as I think I said earlier, they're actually being successful at reducing the noise now.
And what is your strategy when you have a client like that? Do you need to go out and do measurements right away?
For the BART system, we got involved because somebody at BART noticed, which is a fairly obvious thing, that it was very loud in some places and they could just figure out where to grind the rail based on how loud it is on the train. And so we were hired to do measurements on board the train and provide information on the most important locations for rail grinding. And one of the anecdotal pieces of information we had is that people at the wayside had a strategy of calling before it got loud, so they would get it ground before it got loud, before the noise level was really raised too high. And the BART managers wanted to have a way of telling people, no, you're not in line, we'll get to you, but other locations are more important before that. And we've been measuring there for a while and identifying, giving them a priority, grind here, then grind here, then grind here.
So for that, you need field data?
Yes, and the field data we're getting is measuring onboard the trains. We get on a revenue service train with somebody from BART as a guide, base, of course, and get in the operator's cabin of the trailing car and measure the noise, just sort of measure it continuously. And we relate the noise that we get to the milepost, which is what they use for identifying where they are on the track.
And the identification of the milepost, is that purely a visual identification?
No, we use a radar gun in the train. We know where we are when we leave the station. We know where we are when we get to the next station. And by having the radar gun and integrating the speed to get distance, making sure the distance maps up correctly to the system, we can identify the exact locations where the noise is. And we found that over a period of time, which we've been doing this for about 6 to 7 years, we've been doing it every 6 months for the whole system. And the noise levels, we tend to match up very closely within a few feet. So it's a way of keeping track of what the condition of the rail is.
So you ride the whole system every 6 months?
Yes, although they're having us increase it to every 3 months as they're going through bringing in new vehicles and they've changed the profile of the rail to provide better capability to get around curves. So the wheels are now tapered a bit where they were a cylindrical with no taper on them.
Oh, so we are actually changing the design of the vehicle itself?
Yes, basically. The vehicle, the wheels and the rails, and they're putting in new rail profiles as they grind the rail now, too. And both of those, they hope, will eliminate the rail corrugation problem, or at least reduce the rail corrugation problem, and improve the steering going around curves and so on.
Is this unique to BART?
Their problem is unique to BART, and there's a lot of different theories about why BART has this problem. One is that they have the cylindrical wheel instead of a tapered wheel. Two is that the rail fasteners on direct fixation track are put a little bit farther apart than on other systems. And the gauge is wider. They don't have a standard gauge. They're a little over 5 foot wide gauge as opposed to 4 feet, 8.5 inches for the standard gauge. All those may be factors that are causing the corrugation to occur.
I understand that you've developed a technology for identifying and quantifying this problem of corrugation.
Yes, we're using it on the Sound Transit system in Seattle, which is a fairly new system, and we plan to use it to judge the quality of the rail grinding before the rail grinder gets off the system so we can do the test like the day after they do the grinding and identify whether there's any shortfalls in the grinding.
What about other applications and other kinds of problems, let's say particularly in the rail area? I'm thinking about some cases, for example, here in Chicago where there's a fair amount of complaining about noise associated with rail freight yards that are pushed into the center of communities.
Yes, and typically for rail freight yards, we worked on one down by Midway Airport just recently. And there, of course, the freight yard was there first. It's been there for 100 years, and the community has gotten closer. I mean, there's some serious noise problems can occur with rail freight yards, particularly where they're doing the classification of a new freight train. One in South Chicago, it's what they call a hump yard, where the rail cars are sort of pushed up to the top of a small hump, a hill, and then released and classified over, I think there's 60 different lines that they get classified their cars into. And they use what's called a retarder to slow them down. And the retarders are putting a steel blocks against the steel wheels, and they can create a horrible squeal. There's relatively few retarders still around, but they can be very noisy, the high screeching type noise. And it's not entirely clear how you go about reducing that. I understand there are firms that are investigating that. Siemens, which is a very large international firm, is one of the ones that are apparently working on that.
Would that be the Belt Railway of Chicago?
Yes, it's in the village of Bedford Park, and it's just a short distance from Midway Airport.
Yes, right, south of the airport. You don't see an immediate solution to that squeal. I've heard that noise. My experience is that when you visit that facility, you're given ear protection before you go out the door.
Well, I don't know, because we never actually got onto the facility. We were working with the village and identifying which ones were the problems and identifying what to do about it. It looks like it's the passive retarders. These are the ones that are at the end of the yard, sort of the end of each one of the lines, the line lining the trains up, make sure the vehicles don't escape the yard. Has happened and caused some huge problems south of Canada. And they apparently doubled up passive retarders, which are the ones that keep the cars in the yard. And when they doubled them up, it may have tightened them up also. The noise levels got higher and there were complaints. So there's some new hotels that are put in that area. I think it's 10 hotels basically serving Midway Airport. And the word I heard is that Southwest, Midway is a big hub for Southwest. The flight crews were staying in one of the hotels, and sometimes it was loud enough they couldn't sleep, and they couldn't fly then. So some flights had to be canceled. I don't know the details on that, but that's what I heard. And the interesting thing is it strongly depends on what direction the wind is blowing. When I was there for a week doing measurements, we heard the noise, but it was never very loud. And I know that other times it was quite loud. And we're pretty sure it has to do with which direction the wind's blowing and how hard it's blowing.
In a case like that where the noise is affecting human activities, residential areas or in this case hotels, what's the protocol that you use for field measurement? What technology do you take to the field and what are you measuring and for what periods of time?
Well, for this case, we knew it depended on weather conditions fairly strongly. We used a noise monitor, which is an unattended noise monitor that runs on batteries for at least 24 hours, and sometimes we change the batteries. For this one, we did continuous measurements over a week. It records the instantaneous sound level and stores that digitally. And then when the noise level gets above a certain level that we program into it, the monitor will record the wave file of the sound so we can play it back and listen to it, see what it was. And that's largely the type of technology that we used for this measurement in Bedford Park. And for most of our measurements, we're looking at train pass-bys and want to know that we actually got a train pass-by, not an airplane overflight or something else. So we have fairly detailed data on the noise.
The first measurement you're taking, or the base measurement, I would describe that as a sound pressure level. And then for high sound levels, you're measuring the waveform, which to me says the frequency.
Well, it's both the waveform, which is basically an analog, although of course it's digital, but you can play back, it's like, you know, playing back a CD or something. You hear this fairly high quality sound. We also get the frequency spectrum, so we can tell where it's coming from, what type of sound is it. And on something like a hump yard, it's a very high-pitched squeal, and pitch is basically frequency. Higher pitch is higher frequency. And that's an important part in diagnosing what's causing the sound and how we might go about solving the problem.
I assume that's also important in terms of how people react to the sound, how people perceive the sound.
Yes, absolutely. And certainly the high-pitched squeal is a bit like fingernails on a blackboard, for those who still remember blackboards.
Yes, people are particularly sensitive to that. So just circling back, is there a mitigation strategy that you think is promising in a case like that? I mean, are barriers more logical than, for example, trying to fix the noise source?
Sort of our standard approach in sound is that the best approach is to solve the noise problem at the source. And then you can look at the path, which would be a sound wall, to attenuate the sound as it goes the path to the receiver. And the final is at the receiver itself to do something to the receiver, which would be like improving the sound insulation of the hotel or the residence. And just going back to the Bedford Park situation, the hotels seem to have already put a lot of effort into improving the sound insulation at the hotels to reduce the amount of sound that gets into the hotel from the outside.
It would seem then there's an issue of who pays for the cost of mitigation and whether the generator or the receiver.
Yes, and certainly airports, they've done quite a bit of sound insulation around airports in an effort to make it more acceptable to people living there. And there's been fairly large sound insulation programs around the major airports. Those have been big programs.
Going forward, is this a problem that's going to be with us for a long time? Is it going to get worse, or are we going to learn to manage it?
Well, I think the answer might be yes to all of those. I mean, it certainly has a tendency to get worse. We are going to have more rail transit systems built for cities where traffic is bad, which is pretty much everywhere. I live in Los Angeles, and the traffic is pretty astronomical. But there is a lot of rail transit being constructed right now. In the county of LA passed a 0.5% sales tax in November 2016 that's supposed to be raising something like $100 billion over a period of time, which is a lot of money to me. And it's all for rail transit. So the county decided that they were willing to accept the tax to pay for more alternatives to driving. And in California, to pass a new tax, you have to have a 2/3 majority vote for it. And they had, I believe it was 71% voted in favor of it. So clearly there's a lot of that coming. And there is a lot of effort put into when new rail systems are built into making them quiet. But similarly with airports, the aircraft have been getting quieter and quieter. But of course, they're still flying over houses. It's still annoying, but the technology is getting better. And we run into this with new rail cars that they are being kept quieter. The maintenance is getting better. The Federal Transit Administration is requiring transit systems, who gets federal money, to have a program to manage their assets, which includes the rail and the vehicles, and keep them in a state of good repair, which is not an easy to find number, but the general approach will be to make sure that you don't end up with situations like in Washington Metro, where apparently there was a considerable amount of deferred maintenance and they had to catch up, get the problem solved. And I guess New York City has, not too surprisingly, has quite a large amount of deferred maintenance to deal with over the years. And I'm sure the chief CTA has a similar situation. But there seems to be a movement towards making sure that things actually are kept in a state of good repair.
There certainly is. And what you've said, I think, is very encouraging that the designers of new systems are paying more attention to noise and other externalities. So maybe the problem won't get worse, and we hope it'll get better in the future.
Yes, definitely.
So thank you very much. It's been really interesting to hear the work that you're doing, particularly in the rail area. And you've given us a bit of an optimistic view of the future of the noise consequences of rail transportation. Good to be in touch with you. Thanks for talking to us today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.